As I sit here on Christmas Day morning, I want to take the time to wish you all a very Merry Christmas. If you're of the Jewish faith, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, Happy everything, and most of all, Happy New Year. I wish you and your family all the best. Now, please join me for the special episode where I talk to my good friend, Jeff Brown, who's a workplace education trainer, and we look at some things that happened in 2019 and some trends coming for 2020. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode. Hey, everybody, here with my friend Jeff Brown today. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing today?
We're doing great, Rob. Hi, everybody out there in the internet land.
Yes, the great old pearls of the internet. And we all know, tongue-in-cheek, the internet is all bad and a mess, and you know how that is, right?
I know, it's all true.
It's all true. So I thought, Jeff is a workplace education trainer, one of the best trainers I know, and I thought we'd do a little bit of a trip down, kind of. A couple of things have happened in social media this year, a couple of things have happened in tech this year, and a couple of things have happened in WordPress this year, and then we kind of go from there and sort of give you guys a little bit of a listen of what's gone on, where we think it's going, why we think it's going, and to some degree how all circles come back to Rome and all things become the same again. Right, Jeff?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I thought we'd kick it off by talking about WordPress a little bit. Last November, we hit Gutenberg for the first time in 2018. 2019 November, we hit a year of Gutenberg, and frankly, not much has changed. I shouldn't say not much has changed. Not much has changed from the community standpoint. The blocks are getting better. They're making some inroads, but I don't think the community has accepted it as much as they would have liked. Your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, it didn't go as smooth as they planned it. From my participants, as far as their perspective, the people that manage the small business, they found it confusing. They found it really different than what they had been used to working. We know change comes, but for some, change is hard because at the end of the day, WordPress, for a lot of the people that I train, is not the main thing they do. They have a business and they need a website. They use WordPress, and they are literally trying to keep up and keep things flowing as best as they can. And so this change has been a real eye-opener and in some cases a bit of a struggle for some of them to get used to.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you and I have both spent a lot of time in a WordPress site, either teaching, doing, and I haven't been able to get my head wrapped around Gutenberg to this day. So the approach I've gone is I use a page builder. I'm in a Aveda fan as you are, so I use the Aveda theme / page builder, but frankly, Elementor, Beaver Builder, Oxygen, Divi, any of those page builders are really good these days. And if you're using a page builder, I think the advantage to using Gutenberg is what's happening is a lot of people are having a developer develop with the page builder, and when they do their blog posts, they use Gutenberg to do the blog posts. I don't even do that. I actually use Aveda to do my blog posts and be done with it.
Absolutely. I like working in that framework, and as much as I can, I try to teach my participants to pick a builder and then just go with it, because it combines the best of everything. It's got the framework for Gutenberg built right in, and essentially all the benefits of Gutenberg are right there for them in an easier way for them to navigate.
Yeah, no question. And I was talking to Bob Dunn, Bob WP, last week. Shout out to Bob. And the conversation we were having is, what do you think about Gutenberg? And he said he's been using Gutenberg for all his blog posts. So Bob's got his head wrapped around it. Bridget Paul, if you follow Bridget on Twitter, Bridget's been running a lot of the Gutenberg discussions via automatic Gutenberg Times. So shout out to Bridget. She's got her head wrapped around it more than most people. I would say Matt Mullenweg, WordPress founder, is frankly listening to the community. A lot of people don't think he is. I don't agree. I think they've made changes because of the community. So.
Yes, yes. I mean, I believe in what they were trying to do, because effectively it's all about the code. It's all about your content being understood by Google, for instance. And the browsers and really just making it the best that it can be. But in some ways, it's been a hard transition where people are still struggling to get their head wrapped around the everybody wants the good, but they've got to make the good work. And so that's where Gutenberg has had its challenge from the get-go, is that just people can't seem to now, if you know coding and stuff like that, you get the whole concept, and you can, I mean, I love that we can interject extra code into Gutenberg, and I really like that possibility. For most people, that's not a reality. They're putting a block in, as long as they can get something in that block, that's about as far as they're going to go. And then they're struggling to go, what's next and how does it look?
Yeah. And I would agree with you. And I think it's more important as a business owner to get your messaging down, copywriting, and things like that, than to frankly worry about fancy design. I think I still see a lot of stuff out there where I kind of look at and say, okay, did somebody really put in a slider that took up the whole above the scroll, and they wonder why they're not getting any messaging on their website? So I think there's a lot of that going on too. And yeah, I think that stuff is more important than the vehicle that creates it.
Yeah, because if your content is beautiful, but nobody sees it, it doesn't rank well, or it's not showing up in the searches of others, then what's the use of it? I would rather have a moderately okay looking design and then showing up really well so that you get a great listing on Google from what you've created. Mm-hmm. And then people can at least click it. And because remember when you first page Google, you know, everybody wants to be first page Google, but that's not the end all be all, because we've got 10 organic listings there. They're all auditioning for the click. Who gets clicked first? That's right. At the end of the day, your perfectly designed web page or blog post, if it's not going to perform well in that index, the search index, then there's a problem there.
I would agree, and I would also go so far as to say, as a business owner, if you want quick ROI, I'd be coming up with a PPC, a pay-per-click, or a social media advertising budget faster than waiting for SEO to do its magic, because sometimes SEO changes can actually take 6 months to a year, whereas if you're doing pay-per-click, you can get results within weeks. So I really think that's a big factor as well.
Yeah, it all comes down to this. Opportunity knocks on the door. You open the door, you grab opportunity by the throat and drag it in, kicking and screaming, but get the job done.
Yep. So let's go on to social media for a minute. This year we've seen Google fined by the EU, European Economic Community. We've seen Mark Zuckerberg in front of Congress, which is actually quite amusing because congressional leaders in the U.S. don't understand what social media is, except for Donald S. Trump, but that's another story.
Yeah.
We've seen people complaining about privacy, yet they continue to opt in all the time and don't read terms of service, but somehow it's Facebook's fault. And then we see this whole issues that have come out worse where social media sites like Twitter will no longer take political ads. General thoughts on what's going on?
Well, why not? There's been so much trouble with, like Facebook, for instance, with the political ads and what's going on. Twitter just said, let's just stay out of it and let's do what we do really well. I mean, if you don't have to go into that arena, why would you? Why would you potentially want to end up sitting where Mark was sitting in Congress because you allowed political ads? So maybe it's not what everybody's happy with. But at the end of the day, Twitter really has to cover their butt, basically, and eliminate a lot of the risk that could happen. And right now, this is the time where things are ramping up. And Twitter, by not allowing political ads, could literally skirt a lot of mess by not being in it, whereas other networks could be literally up in front of Congress again.
But the issue becomes even more than that. In many states, including Canada, we've got cannabis being legal, but you can't advertise online for it. You've got a whole scale of an adult industry where many parts of it are legal. And I'm not just talking the sex for sale game. I'm talking everything from adult stores to you name it. Yeah. You can't have advertise online for it. So a lot of purists would argue and say, but this is censorship. And is that really right either? What do you think?
Well, at the end of the day, Twitter is a business. It's their property, and they can pretty much do what they want. There's just been so many people stepping in it this year, so much controversy, so much focus away from the real momentum that these social networks should be focusing on. And now they've got these side currents pulling at them, slowing their momentum. I mean, they're a business. They have to literally press ahead and try to make the magic.
So, Jeff, I thought we'd jump into the whole realm of internet, website, and personal security these days. And what kind of triggered me into that is if you've been following the story out of Ontario or Canada, LifeLabs, which is a basically a company that does medical tests. They do radiology tests and they do blood work. They were compromised this past week to 15 million people in Canada. Last I read yesterday, there's a class action lawsuit started. There's all kinds of privacy concerns. We know from working in the WordPress space, we've dealt with plugins and code, and that's been compromised. Microsoft on Patch Tuesday had a zero-day vulnerability, and it goes on and on and on. What do you think?
It's almost to the place where the average person doesn't have the skill set to be able to operate in this environment. And I'm sorry to say this, but in our quest to almost make things simple for them, we've made it more complicated because now there's more things needed to stay safe. Let me give you an example. Say we got a site, any kind of site. We got a username, we got a password. And now we knew that passwords can be compromised. And at the end of the day, people keep on using the same password over and over and over again, and it's not strong enough. And so we finally get into a place where we use a good password, and now we're introduced to two-step verification, which means, and you'll love this, the verification comes by text, or heaven forbid we have to use a third-party authenticator to generate those codes, which means that I need to understand more about my phone and how to use it, where I just want to use it to call someone and maybe get my emails. And now I'm faced with all these challenges, and I'm a business person, or I'm a person that just uses it for personal basis, and I want to pull my hair out because it's gotten a lot more complicated, and my friend got hacked, and now I'm afraid. What do you think of that?
I wholeheartedly agree. Let's go back to the SIM card problem. There's a term out there that's become really big at the end of this last year called simjacking, and it basically means you call the cell phone company up, you impersonate, the customer service rep doesn't want to piss you off, pardon my language, and what happens, he sends you a SIM card. Ask the head of the founder of Twitter what happened with simjacking. He was a victim to that scheme. So his account was hacked because he was simjacked. And what it teaches people is you shouldn't be relying on your SIM card and your cell phone for two-step authentication. Frankly, at the end of the day, you should be using a third-party tool like Google Auth, which works really well. I actually use what's called the NubiKey, which is a security key in conjunction with Google Auth. I have multiple ones in case I lose one or one gets broken or something. But you have to do that. And let's go back to the whole password thing real quickly. I still think the password solutions are easy. The people on a Mac love a service called 1Password, which is very popular if you're a Mac. Or if you're cross-platform, browser. I'm a big fan of LastPass.
Yes.
It's been out forever. And LastPass can be used on a cell phone. It is free to use on a cell phone and your PC. They also have a family, which you can pay a little more for, which I do actually. And one of the cool things is if something happened to me, all my wife has to do is email a special code to LastPass. And if they don't get a response from me in a week, they unlock that account to my wife and everything in it. So it's like in case somebody's deceased or emergency or something like that. And we're not really talking about this. This is food for thought for any business owner, but you should think about your digital assets if something ever happens to you in your business. It's
absolutely.
That's another discussion for another day, actually.
Yes.
But that's a big one. But and things like that. And it's always, so having spent as long as I have in tech support, computer security, and everything else I've done, I think it's always the problem between making it locked down and usability for the user. And it's where do we find that middle ground? And I don't think we found it yet, to be honest.
No, it all has to do with the basic idea of how we use passwords.
Yes.
And how many passwords do we have and how do we keep track of them? And whenever I do any training, I tell people there's four different ways that people literally do it. The worst one is one password, one email, one username for everything.
Yep.
If that gets breached, these guys that we know as hackers literally have a program, slam it in, it goes through the whole internet, boom, done, you're cooked.
No question. And I'm going to stop you there for a sec. And a shout out to our friend Scott Mills, who's a constable with Toronto Police Force. He reminded me of a couple of weeks ago of a website I know and use, and that's called If You've Been Pawned.
Yes.
So if you take your email address and put it into that site, it has a database, and it is legitimate. So if you're worried about throwing your email into another site, and it will tell you all the sites that you're on that email has been compromised.
Yeah, have I been pawned?
Have I been pawned? So you need to check that one out. So keep going, Jeff. What you're saying.
So the next one is pen and paper. Mm-hmm. And I tell people don't use coil books. Don't use books that just don't have sections, because you ended up putting a password in one place, mm-hmm. and then you keep on writing stuff, and then you put change the password, and you put another spot, and you come back to the old one, and you're not quite sure where the password is. You spend more time resetting your password, and you have to think about this. This is time you can't bill as a business. So if you've got your passwords on paper and it doesn't have sections and it's organized, you're going to waste a ton of time. And I tell people, when you get rid of a password, put a line through it. Don't completely destroy it, because what if the network asks you what was the previous password? You have to be able to see that.
Yep.
And so if you've got a paper book, you've got potential water damage. You have to treat it like a Visa card. You keep that thing close. You don't share that. You don't leave it unattended. It's the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, and you have to guard it. The next part is if you got a password keeper on a phone. We're not talking LastPass or anything like that. Just, you know, some people will put it in their notes. So what happens if the phone doesn't start? You better hope that stuff is backed up. If it's not backed up and it's not secure and encrypted on the other end, if someone breaches the other source on the other end of it, you're in trouble. And so stuff happens to phone. The greatest majority of things literally are plop. You know where it drops.
In a toilet.
And so your bag of rice, and you're just praying this thing's going to come around. But if you cannot go online and get this stuff because your phone is down and out, you're in trouble. And the best place I tell people, and this took me a while to get to that place, is to use an online password keeper that is secure, that has two-step verification, that has the right encryption on their end that prevents even an employee from getting into it. That's what I like. That's why I like LastPass. Yep. There's other programs out there. But this one, it took me literally months of
trying to get used to the idea, I'm going to be putting all my passwords online. And it, for me, it had to offer the ability to any device, even my friend's computer. We've got LastPass.com login. It also has to have the ability to print my passwords so I could put them in a vault. And so I love that about LastPass.
I do, yeah.
And that's where, because literally I'm signing in with one password and I'm clicking buttons to go to other places. And then from there, I'm using two-step verification on those. But that's literally, and I don't even know my Facebook password. It's in the vault. I'm clicking a button. Yep. And so I could be tortured. I couldn't tell you my Facebook password.
So what's really cool too with LastPass is I don't use it in a corporate environment, but they have a corporate package. I can actually, if you work for me, I can give you corporate access and you can click on something to log in and it won't even let you see, say, the accounting password. It's set up that way and it just clicks in. So it's really great to share with employees from a security perspective. So when the employee leaves, you don't have to reset all your passwords.
Absolutely. And how many places have had employees call up, I forgot my password?
Yeah.
Well, if you've got a dashboard and an administrator that can administrate them, it ends up, in that case, them just clicking buttons and going there.
Yeah. I really think if you're concerned about this whole thing about passwords and SIM jacking, which we talked about, I think you have to go back and read an old book called The Art of Deception. It's written by the legendary hacker Kevin Mitnick. The guy's a genius. And he's the one who hacked the FBI website and then became their number one security consultant. But this book is all talks about social reengineering. So basically what he says is 90% of all initial password attacks are somebody working their way in, not the electronics, which I tend to agree with. So the other thing, excuse me, while we talk about passwords, as we move forward into 2020, business owners, please start taking regular backups. Personal owners, please start getting your photos to back up off your smartphone automatically. You can go use Google Photos, which is free, set it up to backup. If you've got OneDrive or Google Drive, you can set photos to backup automatically there. If you've got Amazon Prime, you get Amazon Photos for free. Please set one of these apps to backup photos automatically off your phone so Absolutely. That if you drop your phone, you break it, you're not up a creek with a paddle. On the website, I deal a lot with website hacks. Please make sure that you update your website on a weekly basis and you have a backup. And by the way, if you're taking a backup, make sure you can do a restore before you really need it, because a backup is only as good as a restore. And I agree with you. It's, you know, shameless plug, I'm in the space, and I think it's time people say, I can do this all myself, but business owners, frankly, you guys don't have time to do this. Hire somebody to do it. I don't care if it's me or somebody else, but protect your business because it's getting really tough out there. Every day I wake up and I read about 5 breaches, and I've got my head to the ground.
Yeah.
And
it's funny that you say that because this afternoon after we get off this, I'll be restoring a website that got hacked and still trying to determine how it happened. But nevertheless, regardless of how it happened, we're going to be restoring it with a backup plugin. And fortunately, the website owner had a backup. The host really wasn't that helpful. There are other companies that would love to help them for an extremely large amount of money. And
me too, by the way.
I know. But when I train workshop participants, I do WordPress 1 and 2 programs with workplace education. One of the things I teach them to do is to use a plugin to back up their site. And if they go, you know, this is kind of expensive, I'll just indicate to them how expensive it is to have a security company pull the virus out of your site.
Yeah. And so I'll give you the expense. So I have care plan packages that start around the $800 Canadian a year, which, you know, when you break it out per month is almost nothing. and on the low end. And if you had to restore a site, I can restore a site within probably 15 or 20 minutes. If you don't have a backup, fixing that site can cost you in the thousands of dollars. I know the last one I referred out was an e-commerce site, and his cost was $8,000 because he wanted four-hour service.
Yeah.
At Christmas time.
I understand that because he is going to be selling a ton of stuff in that short period of time, so he wants to get back in action.
Yep. So what business owners really need to think about, and personal people as well, is what this is worth to them if they lost all this. And usually with photos, I hear the word priceless all the time. So if it's priceless, treat them like they're priceless. If your data to replace is worth in a $500,000 range, which is not uncommon, treat it like that. Protect it like that. You wouldn't leave a diamond earring worth $1 million on a counter where somebody can walk in and put it in their pocket, would you? So why are you doing that with your data and your business?
Well, let's kind of recap a little bit, Rob, and go somewhere that I know you're dying to go to. We've got the backup of the website. And the question then becomes, where do you put that wonderful backup when you need it? Because we're going to be talking about the R word. Ransomware.
Yeah. So what I think, we are going to go there. So what I think you need to do as a business owner is you need to have two copies of that off your computer. One in your office and one, I don't care where you put it, friend's house, home. In my case, I use a backup server that actually syncs to a backup server offsite, except that's an automated expensive way. But if you're worried about cost, go buy yourself two USB hard drives. They're under $100 for a terabyte, folks. So $200, make two copies, take one home, leave one at the office, and you're good. It's that simple.
Well, I have to wonder how some of these bigger organizations fall prey to ransomware, where you almost think that they don't have a backup. And yeah. I got to question whether these IT teams that they've hired really are doing the job they're supposed to, because one of the things I do is I take a backup of my stuff. It's offline. It's not connected. So if my machine does get hit, I have an external drive, many external drives that I can plug in and just get right to work.
I think where it's coming from is I don't think some of these big IT shops are doing proper disaster recovery testing. I have a good friend of mine who is in IT with the Bank of Montreal, and used to be part of DR Weekends, Disaster Recovery Weekends, where they test systems. I know with my clients, I regularly test. I check data integrity. I know when I was in healthcare, at one of Toronto's major hospitals, the team that looked after the backups, not my team, used to do regular disaster recovery tests. Many of these organizations don't. Many of the cities that have fallen, the guys doing ransomware are actually targeting. They're doing their homework. So they targeted some cities in Florida, if you remember.
Yes.
And if you look, they all go to the same insurance company that looks after small cities in Florida. So they determined these small cities would probably not have big IT budgets. So they attacked them, and the insurance company paid out the ransoms, because it was cheaper to pay out the ransoms than to worry about the data.
It makes you wonder.
Keep going.
It makes me wonder why these people, because it's not like the information they have can be easily got somewhere else. Sometimes this information is really hard to acquire in the first place. Mm-hmm. And like emails, for instance, personal information, things that really shouldn't be going out the door in the first place. And they take a while to accumulate this stuff. Mm-hmm. If you lost it all, it would take you a long time to build it back up.
No question.
And I'm wondering why they just aren't doing their due diligence, because it's not like it's a small entity. Some of these people are pretty big, and they've got a lot of information that's very key for a lot of the businesses in that area to run, because they're the connected hub through which, for instance, real estate agents often work with city departments to do things. And when a city department goes down, it stops them, and it stops a whole chain of people from doing their job.
And you and I have talked about this offline. I've actually coined 2020 is going to be the year of ransomware. If you thought 2019 was bad, I think. And one of the things that causes this a lot, I hate to say it, it's phishing scams and links and emails. Folks, you just got to be so careful. We're going into the holiday season here. There's more Santa scams and more not real scams. And by the way, if you work for Canada Customs, you can find me in Toronto. Feel free to stop by. Please send your police officers with you, because I'll have mine. And, you know, we need to start listing the scams. And I was tongue-in-cheek talking to a cousin of mine who works for Border Services out in British Columbia. And I said, could you please just send your arresting officers and come get me? Because, you know, the scams are still running in a fire.
Absolutely.
Let's just start ignoring them and shutting them down and not even answering the phones. And
the thing that we need to keep in mind is that this is a process of education.
Yeah.
Because I think of this way. We may be okay, but we need to educate the people around us. Like mom and dad, you are protecting your inheritance when you teach mom and dad how to avoid these things. Don't be click happy. If you're not sure, call me. I will stop what I'm doing and help you out. Don't be clicking and putting information into places that you're not sure of. And one thing I tell them, if you feel like you're being pressured to put something in, there's a good chance that it's not legitimate.
So true. So we've kind of talked a little about backups. So the last thing I wanted to talk about is move on to the wonderful world of social media. Because social media is dear to Jeff's hearts. Don't know if any of my listeners know, Jeff and I met on social media probably about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Originally on Twitter. I still think Twitter is very relevant in the world. If anybody doesn't believe so, ask Donald S. Trump, President of the United States, how relevant Twitter is.
Yes.
You can like or hate him for his political beliefs, but if he was a marketer, we would all think he was wonderful, because he still makes himself relevant no matter what he does. So,
absolutely.
That I'll say. The social media landscape is changing. One of the things going on is, I think, the users of social media is blaming the sites for privacy. I have a saying in my life that privacy starts with you. I'm sure our friend Constable Scott Mills would agree with me. I think we need to stop blaming all these social sites for the fact that I put all my information out on them and it was stolen. What do you think?
Well, when I train businesses, I tell them to be very careful about what they put out there. Like, for instance, something very simple, Facebook and your birthday. I tell people, don't, when I'm doing these courses, put your real birthday in there. It's okay to lie on this one. Make yourself younger. But it's that whole idea that your birthday could be used by someone to compromise your cell phone company information, for instance. Because one of the security questions that a cell phone company may ask you is, when is your birthday?
So well, write it down somewhere and fake it.
Absolutely. But at the end of the day, I cannot still believe, you know, people are going, count down 13 more days till I go away for 2 weeks. Yep. I mean, Lenny and Squeaky are going to make an appointment to rob you. It's
I have a policy. I don't post any pictures while I'm away. I haven't posted pictures of my last vacation at all. Thank you. And and by the way, I should tell you people, if you're looking at renting, and here's a tip, because this one comes from my wife, do not post social media pictures of you being a party fanatic, of dirty apartments, because if a landlord is smart, they're looking you up on social media. And if they're seeing this stuff, they're not going to rent to you. So just, you know, while we talk about that, this is where privacy matters. Only show what you want to be showed and think long and hard.
Well, here's another of my favorite ones. People shaming businesses. Do you know what I mean? And I see this a fair amount where we might even have social media consultants not getting their way, and all of a sudden they're bashing a business. I mean, I spent most of my training experience trying to help business to be good business. And I believe that, first of all, as a business, you need to be a business of excellence. And every business of excellence will, from time to time, drop the ball. But I'm not saying go and offer poor customer service, because if you do, you're going to get called on that. But the idea that people would shame businesses to get what they want, that's just not cool.
The reason it happens, though, and I'll tell you from my perspective, because been there, done that, you pick up the phone and you call them. And I'm going to use Rogers Communications as an example. I've been there, done that. And you don't get the respect on the phone from the front level or the management team. Well, then I think as a customer, you have the right to go there. Because
And I agree, you should. And you and I have had this conversation, escalated, email, phone, however you can. And if you don't
office
get
office and the president.
then you have to reach out on social media. But you just don't go immediately to social media and threaten them or try to shame them to get your way. Yep. That's just not, I mean, in the realm, because we know small businesses make up the lion's share of businesses in our areas. We have to think about supporting and helping these people. You know, I like buy local. I believe we should support local business.
Do too.
But I don't think the first thing we should do is slam a local business because we don't get our way. I mean, try to go through the normal ways of phoning, email, whatever you have to do. Take it offline.
And then see. And by the way, if the local business fulfilled their obligation, and I've been there and still been slapped. So that's not cool either. That's just sour grapes. If you fulfilled your contract and you did everything you said you were going to do, you know, in the days of reviews, I don't think you have the right to go and post a negative review because you delivered exactly what you promised.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that going on. I want to move on to one more subject before we get into some trends. And that's this whole aspect of Facebook cookie tracking. So I'm going to throw something out. I'm going to be a really bad marketer right now, folks. And if you're concerned about scripts or tracking, there is a new privacy browser on the market called Brave, brave.com. Go download it. What Brave does is it turns all the scripts off in the background and actually speeds up your internet experience. Now, the only problem is if you start doing this and the world does this at mass, then the internet is going to become a pay-per-use model for sites. And I don't think that's a bad thing. So one of the things I read a white paper in the last couple of weeks about was somebody complained and said everybody's willing to pay for streaming services. Netflix, Disney, Spotify. Yes, I have all three of them. But then when you say to them, will you pay for access to Facebook? No, the internet's free. Well, why? And don't you understand that advertising is what pays for the internet?
Absolutely. It's just so, like TV.
So you've got some options. But what I would say is think really hard what you wish for. What do you think, Jeff?
We've talked about this quite a bit, Rob. And
I know.
It's all about quality. And at the end of the day, free gets people in, but does free really provide what the end source needs to grow and provide the necessary things to keep you safe, for instance? Because at the end of the day, if you go into a restaurant, say, I want my free hamburger, it's not going to happen. If it's a free hamburger, it's probably out of the bin, so to speak.
Yep.
And so these companies need to be companies. They need to generate revenue. They need to survive. They need to hire people to make the product better. So somewhere some money has to be literally made to this company. We don't Facebook. The old saying is, we are the product. We create the content that marketers use to market to us. Essentially, we create content and marketers market to us based on the information, the data that Facebook provides them to market to us. So yeah. Essentially, we are the product when it comes to that. But not everybody can survive on that model. And that's where Netflix, for instance, has a charge. That's where Disney Channel's got a charge. Yep. Because in order for them to get better, to pay people, to create things, then they need to be paid for it. We essentially are creating things for instance, Facebook, Twitter. We create, they don't create, we create, for instance. Yep. And so at the end of the day, there's always been that tension of free versus paid. And the old adage, you get what you pay for, is essentially still the standard of what is going on.
No question. So that's a really good discussion. And I think what we'll do now is we'll move on to some trends in social media. And I think what I'm going to do is fire a couple of trends off to you and ask you what you think. Are you game for that? So sure. Let's start with TikTok.
Ah, oh, good heavens. Good heavens. This is you threw the bomb right out there.
I know.
The fact, let's talk about who owns TikTok. And now I absolutely have had Chinese friends. I love Chinese people. But I really have an issue when using something from the Chinese government where they're so controlled. I mean, we're talking about literally monitoring people based on their social media and stuff like that. So this is a Chinese social media company. Now, there may be great value for people to be there, but it's like I'm going to set up a lemonade stand in a lion's den,
yeah,
and hope that I don't get bitten. And I just don't see, I see a lot of the stuff that is happening behind the background that people don't see. Mm-hmm. And it worries me that I would want to set up a lemonade stand in a lion's den, so to speak.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that it's not, the lions aren't going to bite me, but I literally think there's a real risk. And businesses need to mitigate risk. They need to make wise choices. And I really don't think that TikTok is going to be a good choice for business, especially in the political world we now find ourselves. This thing can go either way. Now, I always hope that things will work themselves out and they'll head in the right direction. But I just don't think that we should be setting up literally a lemonade stand in a lion's den. I just don't think it's a smart thing.
Yep.
And people apparently don't have a problem with setting up a lemonade stand in a lion's den. Yeah.
So there's one tough one. And I agree. I mean, if it were me, I wouldn't be going anywhere near it. I've expressed my opinion. I've had people tell me I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'd rather be safe than sorry. So just as hard, topic number two, in terms of social media, U.S. Congress.
Good heavens. The bombs are dropping, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, now... We hope that Congress has great people that are supplying information to them. But in a lot of ways, they don't seem to understand what they're dealing with. And I want to say that with all kindness and fairness, but they fail to understand the true nature of the internet and what is going on. And they're making decisions based on the information that they have in front of them. And if they really don't have the necessary information, we saw this when Mark Zuckerberg was before Congress.
Yep.
It was, as my brother says, a shot show.
Oh, it was. I watched it. It was
not they clearly, in their questioning, didn't understand the bigger picture, what this thing was about and what was going on. So, and I don't want to say that they were softballing or ducking the hard questions. I just don't think that they really understood the questions that really needed to be asking Mark Zuckerberg. And that's where, I mean, was it, I believe that Congress really needs to get involved in. I know that they need to literally be a part of it, but they also really need to make sure that they have a full understanding, so that when they ask that question and they get an answer back, they know exactly what the person is saying and how to respond to it. And so they just did not, and they didn't get to the meat of it. The real issues of the day, they just kind of just came, it went, and it was almost like, how would you describe that, Rob, in your words, when you saw it?
I think the biggest problem is lawmakers don't understand technology, and that causes an issue when we get into the internet and things like that. I really don't believe that they get technology. There's some smart people like Elizabeth Warren, who's running for Congress, who I've been following. She gets it, but most congressmen and women do not get technology. So you're asking them to pass judgment on a model that they really don't understand.
And they really need to, and they've got people that they surround themselves with. They need to have people that are supplying them with the necessary correct information to give them the picture. I mean, they still need to do a little study themselves, but I can't expect them to do it all. So they need to have good people around them that are supplying truthful, honest, and knowledgeable responses to things that they need to know to make decisions.
They do. Next topic, video on social media.
Video on social media. Well, I thought in 2015, this question was already settled, where video is absolutely the best piece of content. In my workshops, I tell them to do these live streaming videos, because Facebook Live, for instance, because you've got greater visibility out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And so video, when you think of the fundamentals of it, video allows someone to see you, to hear you, and in the realm of building likability and trust. Because text itself can be very tone deaf. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to video, they get to see whether they're going to like you, see whether you're trustworthy. I mean, I put people in front of my wife, and she tells me right away, you know, this person's good or this person's not so much. Yeah. She can read that, and video is a way for a great business owner to practically get to the end user that they are worthy of doing business with. So video literally brings that element in a way that text and pictures just simply cannot capture. How you speak, your tone, that really resonates with people, and it helps people feel safe. Because when you think of it, it's something simple as this. Am I going to do business with you? I'm afraid I don't know you. I go to pick up the phone. I hang it up because, hey, I don't know if they're good people or not. You know, they might be scary. But in a video, you break the ice, so to speak. That makes the initial contact to the business that much easier, because you feel like you're calling a friend, someone that at least you have some feeling or trust with because of what's done on video. Yep. So when it comes to video, it conveys more than pictures and text can ever convey, and it helps people know what you're like.
Mm-hmm. There's two tips I throw out there, and I agree with you. One, if you don't believe it, take your smartphone, take a tabletop tripod, record three videos for 3 weeks, so 9 videos, put them out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday on all your social media platforms. Your visibility will go way up, number one. And number two, if you're trying to get a hold of clients, use a service like Loom.us and send them a video message instead of a text message and see what kind of reactions you get. That video kind of says it all. The next subject, LinkedIn.
All right, LinkedIn. Business to business. LinkedIn has had various different seasons to it. And I mean, not all of them have been wonderful. And I mean, one of the jokes was LinkedIn was becoming a hookup service, literally.
So
they've had to fight that. But they're starting to bring back some legitimacy to that. But that being said, and they are working on these, hi, I'm going to connect with you. And, oh, by the way, here's my offer kind of deal. They're trying to stop that kind of stuff from happening. Because one of the things I think about business is, hey, get to know me first before you throw business in my face. This is not, and I remember an experience where my wife and I, this guy walks up to us and says, I was talking to a friend of yours downtown, and they recommended that I should go see you. And actually, the guy didn't even know him at all. He just literally, that was his line to get in the door, so to speak. And I kind of hate that kind of, scuzzy kind of way of doing business with her. You know, hey, we're friends. Let's, here, want to buy something?
And yeah, I agree. You've heard me say marketing is like dating. I say that that's kind of one of my favorite phrases in the last year, and I really believe that. It takes time to build that relationship. And if anybody doesn't believe that, go buy yourself a copy of Cody Bateman's The Human Touch. And that's what Cody's the founder of Send Out Cards company. I've met Cody in Toronto. I've read his book multiple times, and he talks about building relationships, and that's kind of that. I so agree with you. I wish we could get rid of the people on LinkedIn who they connect with you, and then they dump a list of services in your inbox. And I've gotten so awful that I use a text expansion program that has a canned reply that says, don't you realize marketing's like dating? You don't even know me, and you're trying to sell to me. And I move on.
Let's bring a couple more aspects to it as well. Yep. The groups, I know that LinkedIn's really struggled to get the groups going, but
they're all spammy. It's my problem with them. I don't like them. I mean,
what I like to see, what I really see missing, is the area of mentoring. Older businesses mentoring younger businesses.
Yep.
This could be a really great platform for that. And that it has all the necessary ingredients for this to happen. Mm-hmm. But it literally could be a transformable place for raising up. Because I'm a real big fan of, if I help small business in a local area, I'm helping the economy.
And I agree.
A small business needs to realize that, hey, they're not competing essentially as much local business to local business. They're competing regionally against other areas. And so a strong area or a strong region is key to the success of all the businesses there. And when you think of mentoring around that idea of local business leaders who have been in business a while, they understand the ropes, helping young business people avoid all the pitfalls that literally confront a business that's just rising up. We could literally change the face of regions by mentoring, and LinkedIn can be a great place to begin the process of mentoring businesses, because especially in groups, if they just stop spamming, and if businesses would just literally not be so desperate to get business, that they just literally, it's like someone coming in and taking a dump on your carpet. It's just not welcomed. You know what I mean? And if businesses would literally be good businesses and do the things that they need to do to be strong, good businesses, this LinkedIn and places like that would be far better off. But people are getting so desperate.
I don't disagree. And by the way, it happens on Facebook too. The trend lately is people who, if you sit in any Facebook groups, who will PM you out of a Facebook group, and most Facebook groups have rules against that. I watched one in one of the agency groups the other day that got so bad that Lee Jackson took the offender to Twitter to basically say, by the way, you've been kicked out of my group and five other groups or X number groups, and you know, your behavior is not acceptable. So it's happening there. It's happening everywhere. I think people just need to get back to basics and get away from stuff that shouldn't be happening. And I debated whether it was going to go here, but I think it will.
Well, you've dropped several bombs already, Rob.
I have one more called Donald S. Trump and Twitter.
Well, I have an opinion neither way. But when you think about a marketing aspect, the whole idea of marketing is to get noticed.
Yes.
And so when he writes something, he gets noticed.
That's true. I wish that I could.
I think he's a marketing genius. I think it's a lot more purposeful and planned than most people think, because at the end of the day, how much advertising has this man actually had to pay for?
He's been the
top of the news. I mean, I think of these media outlets, man, they're just giving him free publicity. They're a bunch of knuckleheads. And that if they don't like him that much, if you just stop talking about him, he'd have to pay for advertising, but he doesn't. And so whether you like him or not, he's top of mind. He's what people are thinking about. Because essentially, Donald Trump is a brand.
Yes.
And a brand that doesn't have to pay for advertising. Because everybody, I think there's nobody on the face of the earth that at least has internet or is close to other people that doesn't know about Donald Trump.
So true, you know. And I'll give you another example to the listeners. Levi changed their logo recently, and there's been all kinds of controversy and people talking about it on Facebook. And it's a yellow, and a friend of mine, Penny Miller, I'm going to give Penny a shout out because I can, Cal Miller's wife, said, oh, I really don't like the logo. I went on, and I said, you know what? You might not like the logo, but you're giving all this publicity to it. And she said, well, it turned me off, but the reality of it all is negative publicity is better than no publicity, and it will turn people on whether you like it or not. So you're almost better off if you don't want it to be publicized, not to say anything, and you would be 10 times better off than actually commenting. And then last topic and another bomb, online bullying.
Ah, that is, we've had many, many conversations on this, and I see it all the time. I remember mother saying, if you can't say anything good about someone, don't say it at all. But people do not abide by that rule at all. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a comment. I mean, everybody has a comment. And I mean, I would like to say we can all agree to disagree, but let's talk about the stuff that we can agree upon, or let's just go our separate ways.
Yeah.
But people literally have to go in, and that's what's making social media a hard place to be for a lot of businesses, is that people just want to literally attack. And we see this a CBC story about a school teacher by day and a troll by night.
Yes.
And this person didn't know the people, but they got their jollies by simply dropping bombs, watching the thing blow up, and come back a little later, add a little bit more fuel to the fire. If you want to get your jollies, don't do it on social media. As a matter of fact, go to counseling if you need stuff like that. My goodness.
Well, we are at the point. So I'll give a couple examples. Chick-fil-A. His owner or founder in the U.S. has been very spoken against the LGBT community. He has his opinion. He just said, I don't agree with it, not hate speech. They opened up their only Canadian store in Toronto, and he's been dealing with protests for months, but he doesn't care because the franchise owner is getting free publicity. We all know where the store is, right?
Yeah.
But absolutely. Here's the thing, you can't even have an opinion anymore. There was, a lady in the Toronto Library that did a presentation where she gave her opinion on certain things in the LGBT community. It wasn't hate speech. It was an opinion. But everybody decreed it as hate speech. We're now at the point where if I disagree with you or your friend, somebody's going to come out and say, I hate them. And this is prevalent on social media. There's no discussion. As a business owner, I kind of take the high road. I seem to have developed no opinion for anything lately because You don't know where your next client's coming from. You don't know where your next job is coming from. You don't know which political party you're going to tick off tomorrow. So sometimes it's almost better not to say anything than to say anything, if you get what I'm saying. So,
well, let me give you a really good example. I watched a LinkedIn video from someone I met a long time ago, really great guy. Shout out to Saul Colt.
Yes. No, Saul.
And when he did the video, he talked about people being triggered over everything. And he said it's almost like businesses have to get in either one of two lanes. Yep. The one lane is we literally have maybe a floating video with no people in it. That way nobody gets offended. Some floating text. At the end of the day, the thing is so bland that it's not memorable. Or we have to go on the other side where we're so over the fence, over the top, that people will not take it absolutely like it's not serious, but it's memorable, and we get our marketing point across. It's so outlandish that there's nothing that can be said bad about it. Does that make sense? So there's two extremes, and it's a hard place for businesses to really be now, because, man, if you're literally, we had this discussion in one of my groups. A person is from a place a million miles away, and they're primarily the community is primarily white. And they want to attract a whole bunch of other people. They want to be welcoming to everybody. But where are they going to get people for these ads without having to hire people for these specific demographics to make sure that the ad is agreeable to everybody? You know what I mean?
You're almost at the point where you've almost got to take the approach that somebody's going to get peeved off with you. And, you know, if we took the approach that we didn't buy from people we were displeased with, we wouldn't buy from anybody. I mean, look at Jeff Bezos. He's running the controversies in the communities, and he's got one of the most successful companies in the world. Bill Gates, till he developed its foundation with his wife, Melinda, was a hated man for a long, long time. So was Steve Jobs over at Apple. I mean, the bottom line at the end of it is, as a business owner, I think you need to get to the point where you stop worrying about appeasing everybody and kind of look and say, okay, where's my market? Where are they on social media? And who do I have to make happy? And stop worrying about all the extra stuff, because it's almost not even worth it anymore, honestly.
Many years ago, I learned this when I worked in the automotive. I was a service advisor in many different capacities in a Chrysler store. Mm-hmm. And it literally, when you say 14% of your people you cannot please, you can actually have them come in. You can literally have their brakes done. Yep. You can rub their feet, give them a massage, feed them, and make it a really great experience. And they'll go out complaining. 14%, which means that, I mean, literally, we're going to do a great job, and some people aren't going to be happy. We just have to learn to tell these people, hey, we've done the best we can, but maybe we're just not the place for you. Yep. And it doesn't mean that they're bad people. Just if we cannot get along, then I encourage that customer to go somewhere else where they can actually potentially have a better experience and get along with that other owner. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's not. It's actually a smart business owner saying, you know, this isn't what I want. I mean, social media aside, we've talked about, I've fired clients in the last year, three actually this year. And part of it was, you know, they really didn't want to work towards what they promised. They didn't want to do what they said. Everybody knows that I like to be a guy of action, so I have a tough time sitting on projects for months ahead of time. I like to get stuff done for people because I want them to be successful.
Yeah.
And, you know, success just doesn't breed. I was listening to a really good podcast yesterday. It was Tony Robbins, who I absolutely adore. And my head was kind of in a funky spot. I was walking out for a long walk because we had a nice day. And Tony was talking about this whole concept of, again, developing raging fans for your business and not just customers. And I was kind of nodding away as I listened to Tony speak, because he is so on the money with that. Like, we need to keep creating fans of our business. We need to keep building communities. We need to keep helping people. And that doesn't always mean you make a sale every time at the end of the day.
Right? Absolutely. Because sometimes a great referral to somewhere else, sometimes that's the best way to go, because we can't please everybody all the time. And if you know that someone else do a better job at something, then by all means. And as businesses of excellence, and that's what I really push when I train, be a business of excellence.
Yep.
Sometimes that means knowing what you're good at and not trying to be all things to all people and being poor at everything. Be great at something and let
Which means, by the way, you don't have to appease all communities either. That's, you know, there's too many businesses that are trying to make everybody happy. And I actually think that's a big mistake. I think you can't make everybody happy. There's no hope and prayer in this society. I think you need to work at concentrating on your business and making it run, not being everything to everybody.
You and I have been around enough to know that when the pendulum swings hard one way, it slams hard to the other before it actually comes into balance again. And really, at the end of the day, businesses are trying to do business. They're trying to either product or service. They're selling product or service along those natures. And they're not trying to offend people. They're just trying to create visibility for what they do. And they just, if you really have to sit down every time and hire a team to go through something, well, this doesn't offend that group. This doesn't offend that group. This doesn't offend that group. You're going to have a pretty unmemorable marketing moment when, and we're not going out to offend anybody. We're just trying to sell something. Mm. And we need to get back to that where we stop trying to figure out who we're going to offend. Because we don't want to offend anybody, but we literally have to focus on this and letting it just go out.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, we can't be all things to all people. We can't make everybody happy. Mm-hmm. And so we just need to be okay with that.
So true. So, you know, 2020 will probably be as interesting as not. There's always things on the go. I think as you move into the next year, the best thing I can say to any business owner is get your goals in line. Like, really take the time over the holidays to kind of work on goals. I like to do goals on short-term and long-term basis. And don't be afraid to adjust those goals. And by the way, don't forget about your family and your friends and all that.
Absolutely.
All work and no play is not the easiest thing. We all know that, and burnout's a problem. So worry about that, and don't be afraid to say, I don't know, I need some help. I mean, you know, the reality of it all is not everybody knows everything. I think the biggest problem right now is people think they would do, and I think you just need to say, I might need a hand, or I might need to get somebody in, or I might need to do something.
Absolutely. And you know, when I first got into this business, I came to a fork in a road. Was I going to do technology or was I going to do training? And there was just two big worlds that one couldn't do well at.
Yeah.
And I chose training. And now I'm even thinking that I need to even refine the direction of my training to do less better than try to do everything not as good as it should be. And all my programs, for instance, you had some great tips there, Rob. One of the things, even at the very essence of it, I tell people, get up early, plan your day, and don't let your day plan you. In other words, you need to know, it's okay to say, no, my day is full, I cannot take any more work on. And that, let's reschedule that. So if you don't plan your day, you keep on saying yes, 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 you're going to run out of time, you're going to disappoint people, and you're going to end up suffering because of that. Mm-hmm. And so I love the idea of setting goals on the micro scale. Plan your day first before your day plans you. That's a
I agree. And use an online calendar. There's a multitude of ways you can do it. I go so far as to take my day and schedule stuff in, not just for clients and not meetings, but stuff I have to do. I live in my calendar, and people say, how do you schedule everything? Well, I can look at my week and say, I did this week. most people can't.
Yeah. Let's do one more topic. This one's near and dear to you because both you and I, 2019 was the year of years for you know what.
Family
stuff. And so absolutely. If you're a business owner, you're an entrepreneur, you need to have a place. You and I, Rob, have been really great at literally bouncing ideas. Mm-hmm. Our moments of insanity, so to speak. Entrepreneurs need to have people that they can go to and unload their frustrations.
Not only that, but if you're running a home-based business, and effectively you are when you're not out training, or I am, I run a major agency right from home, you have to, because humans are social creatures at heart. And one of the problems about running out of home is many business owners get isolated. So they get up, they work all day, their spouse or partner comes home, they don't. One of the things I always do, no matter what I'm in the middle of, when my wife comes in, I drop what I'm doing within minutes. If I'm on a call, fine, but I'll finish the call and then get off and sit around and chat. You have to invest stuff in the out-of-business stuff too. And that is
absolutely,
that was really hard. So we talk about planning your day. The best tip I have there, folks, business owners, is keep one calendar. Your personal and your business stuff go into the same calendar. Don't keep separate ones, please. And the other thing I subscribe to and I have for years is write a journal. Write a journal, keep books. I've got books of journals, and I just started a new one yesterday. And basically write the journal and write your thoughts down every day. And I don't do it so much to be laid on, oh, this has been rough, because I think if you play on the negative, you become conditioned to play on the negative. I think you need to condition yourself to go after the wins and the positives. But there are days that are rough. I mean, this past week I've had multiple friends lose multiple loved ones, and that makes it a rough week, and that's just the way it is. But you have to look at, you know, the positives in it, and you have to condition your brain. The same podcast I was referring to earlier, Tony was talking about how we're conditioned to feel negativity in our brain, and it's so true to that. I mean, look as a kid growing up. You didn't pick up the towel off the bathroom floor, whereas tomorrow you clean the bathroom and nobody says anything because it looks great. I mean, we're negatively conditioned people, and you need to stop that. I mean, that's the biggest problem.
What a great thought. And one of the things that I've been thinking about lately is your brain is essentially like a computer. If you're plunking stuff that's negative in there, for instance, that's what's going to get replayed, which means that you need to watch what you watch. You need to watch who you hang around and what you listen to.
Well, do I get that? I mean, I'm, you know, those who know me know I went through a nasty mess about 4 years ago, a big one, and I'm not going to get into it, but I've talked about it personally, and that was kind of part of my life cleaning. And since then, I've got multiple people that I have basically said, I'm sorry, but your mentality as you've grown up doesn't fit into what I want as a person, and you are allowed to be selfish when it comes to you, you know, and you got to take care of yourself. And
well, you can try to help people, but if they don't want help and they're going to continue to be like an anchor and weigh you down, there's a simple choice that has to happen. For a season, you let them go. If they change, great. If not, then you keep on moving to surround yourself with great people. It doesn't mean that we belittle them, not at all, but at the end of the day, we have to watch, because as entrepreneurs, we're already head and shoulders above the pack, because we're no longer, you know, hey, the guaranteed 2-week paycheck. We've not gone that route. We've gone on a limb to make our own money, to be our own source, so to speak. And so we need to guard our minds to make sure. And one of the best things I ever did was I got rid of the word I can't, because I can't even stop you from trying.
I don't use that word. I don't use, when people send me, I can't do this, my response is you won't do it.
Absolutely.
And I use that a lot. I believe if you want to change things, you can change it. If you don't want to, and that's because you're conditioned. you're preconditioned, and sometimes you got to say, this isn't working. And so, and I would almost suggest, like, I'll go back there, is anybody who thinks you can't change it, go pick up one of Tony Robbins' books, go listen to his podcast for a week. He talks about this kind of stuff all the time. I fell in love with his style when I was younger. I followed him for probably 30 years. I believe in what he teaches. I've been to his seminars. I've even done the walk on fire with Tony a couple of times. And would I have done something like that 20 years or 30 years ago? Probably not. But it's all about empowering you as a business owner to do what you need to do.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't understand. Why give the power to somebody else?
What's about risk, taking calculated risks, but being brave in business? I mean, this 2020 is going to be a year of challenges. Mm-hmm. We're not sure where the markets are going to go, but we know that small business, for instance, is the most resilient type of business possible.
Yep.
Sure, we're making backup plans. We're planning to, you know, what if, but at the same time, we need to be, because there are people that make money in times of recession, hand over fist.
Amazon's a classic example. Jeff Bezos bought all his warehouse spaces back in the 80s during the dot-com bust when everything was falling out of the market, and he built his business on the recession.
So don't be afraid of a recession. You can make money. Just be smart about it. And one last thing, Robert, the trend I see right now for social networks is that they're working hard to create an environment, a better user and an end user experience. They're all striving to do things because they got to keep people there. With all the challenges that have hit the social networks that are causing people to wonder if they still should be there, the greatest challenge for Facebook, for LinkedIn, for Twitter is creating end user experiences where people still want to be on those networks despite all the challenges.
Yeah, and they're doing things to clean it up. Last week, Twitter eliminated a whole pile of Saudi accounts, I believe, if I read right. And just to clean up some bad accounts, they've been running around trying to clean up bots. I mean, and don't kid yourself, the bots are on Facebook too. They're on Instagram too.
Yes.
I would almost suggest, guys, by the way, if you're concerned about pictures, do some back searches. I know I've had my Facebook profile duplicated. My mom has. Multiple people I know have. Folks, these aren't hacks. These are just people copying information. So let's distinguish between the two. But that's going on. I know on Instagram, they now, to improve the user experience, are cracking down on certain terms. So people are being abusive. The Instagram AI will remove those comments automatically. They're doing some of that. They've been doing that for a while. So there's all kinds of stuff going on. One of the things going on social media is they're experimenting with, should we tell somebody how many retweets or how many likes the posts? Instagram's testing that. Twitter's testing that because they don't want it to turn into a competition. They want to take it back to the conversation. So there's all kinds of things going on to help.
So it's the end user experience that's really probably going to define 2020.
And by the way, if you have a website, you better think of the user experience very quickly as well, because a lot of people don't. They do websites from the standpoint of what they want. They need to give the potential customer what they want, not what the
owner. Well, that's a really great principle, because I always teach people for instance, your Facebook page is not for your business. It's for your fans to like, share, and comment on your posts.
Agree.
So your Facebook page is not for you to brag about how great you are, because no one wants to like, share, comment on that. They want to like and share a comment on specifically designed things that are designed for them to like and share a comment on. That's a real classic fundamental that I spend a fair amount of time talking about as we build these posts, and businesses better start sooner than later really understanding the fact that, hey, the page is not for them. It's for their clients, their fans, their followers to like, share, and comment. Sure, the page will benefit from all of that, but it's what do I originally intend to build? Yep. 2020 is going to be about building community with real people, not bots, building community around your business that will like, share, comment, and support you and recommend you. And yep. that, and through automation, mm-hmm. and it's not bad to automate posts, but it's going to involve business owners and people that are doing social media to employ the personal touch.
I would agree. And I'm going to throw two resources at listeners. One is go read or Google the TED Talk for the Start With Why by Simon Sinek.
Oh, yes.
Which is one of my favorites. I tout that all over the place. And the other one is to go read a book called The Inside Advantage by Robert Bloom. It was written about 10 years ago now. It's still very relevant today. What it talks about is why you make your business different and why being different is better than making your business better and why you shouldn't fight everything on a price perspective. So there, that kind of falls in line with what we're talking about. And the whole organizing things, which we talked about earlier, my favorite book is Go Read GTD, Getting Things Done, David Allen. Their books I read and I reread and I reread because they're all relevant. There are three real quick ones, instant wins, instant nuggets out of those books. But and if you don't want to read a book with David, Tim Ferriss actually did a podcast with David Allen. So do a search. It's about 2 hours, and it's a really insightful look into the GTD system. But you know, some things to help you out. As always, Jeff, thanks for the conversation. If somebody wants to reach out, where can they get a hold of you?
Essentially, the alphasocialmediainc.com is the website, but the email is jbrown@alphasocialmediainc.com. Those are the best ways to get a hold of me. And I really hope that we've put enough nuggets in this talk to really help your business. Remember, I'm a fan of taking one thing, learning 10 things and applying or struggling to figure out which one you're going to do. Take one thing and apply it from this talk today, and I hope it really blesses your business.
Yeah, and what I'd like to see the listeners do is implement that one thing. Don't be a learner who learns everything and never implements anything, because at the end of the day, that doesn't get your business where it needs to be. I just want to wish everybody a happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah if you're Jewish. If you're anything in between, please enjoy the holiday season. Thank you for listening to this very special Year in Review podcast, and I look forward to 2020. I want to wish you all the best for 2020, and please work on your family as much as your business and spend time with them. Life is way too short. I want to thank my very special guest, Mr. Jeff Brown, for joining me on this very special podcast. This podcast is dedicated to my late father, Bruce Cairns. If I can help you any way with your digital marketing needs, please go to stunningdigitalmarketing.com. If you'd like to join our free newsletter, please go to stunningdigitalmarketing.com/free. And we'd be glad to send you tips and tricks without hard sells to your inbox a couple times a week to help your business succeed. Thanks once again for all your support this year. Please keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Make your business succeed, and bye for now.